Hi, this is David Orlovsky, and welcome to the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Whether you're watching with our friends over at Torah Anytime or wherever you watch or listen to your podcast, as always, it's exciting to have you along. Now, you may have noticed that there is a slight change from my past podcast, and that is the return of the Rabbi Orlovsky mug. I haven't had one of these in a long time.
Baruch Hashem.
Also, I'm wearing my Schlockrock t-shirt. In case you didn't notice, that Lenny Solomon gave me. And I'll tell you why. Because, when Lenny and I go back 40 years and more, probably more like 45 years, and, he was on the show and he says, I'm going to write you a theme song. And I cannot tell you how many times people have pointed out how catchy it is. I've met people who use it as their ringtone. It's really an unbelievable thing. And, my mother, when I would start complaining about something, she used to say to me, oh, that's going to be your new theme song? Now I can say, no, I have my own theme song. How many people have their own theme song? So I really, I wanted to give a shout out to Lenny. So what's the occasion now? It's because actually, on my podcast about the guy's situation, he left a comment. And so, of course, I think about you all the time, Lenny, but I just want to take this opportunity to be Makir Tov for this unbelievable thing that for our friendship for many years and especially for this theme song. But I am supposed to be doing this more formally, so let me just take out my tie there. That's great. And slip on my jacket so we're able to maintain some sort of a presence. There you go. Now I look like the father from Arthur. Anyway, but deep cut. All right. So we're in the middle of a series, well, part two of a series, about Shabbos. And we mentioned this last time. There's a number of Gedolim who said that what we should be working on, besides our tefillah and our amunah during this time, is focusing on Shmir Shabbos. And try to be Mechazik Shabbos. So what I want to talk about today is the concept of Hachana. Hachana is to prepare for Shabbos. Sheshes yomim ta'aseh melachtecha. 6 days you work, and then you have a Shabbos. So that there has to be a certain amount of preparation that goes into Shabbos. So that Hashem rested on the seventh day, right? Which makes it imply as if he was working on the seventh day. And so Rashi says that the Kodesh Baruch Hu, can do what a person can't do. He can go right up until the moment of Shabbos, and so that it looks to the untrained eye as though he is he's working on Shabbos, but of course he's not. And it's but we can't do that. And therefore, we need time to prepare for Shabbos, and then we need time to stop preparing for Shabbos. Okay, so there's a mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos, where we're supposed to add from the weekday to Shabbos. I have been caught in this quandary where when I'm running late and I go to a particular late minyan, and I realized they're still davening mincha after shkia. What happened to Tosefes Shabbos? Because if I'm davening mincha, that means that it's Friday, and how can I then add on to Shabbos? It's a problem. But we have a mitzvah to be able to add on from Chol to Shabbos, and we need a time to prepare for Shabbos. We are supposed to be mechabed Shabbos. And the preparation is part of that. Now, things have changed. Times have changed. Yeah. Time was that you would have to grind the wheat, sift the flour, knead it in order to make a piece of bread. You didn't have the option of going to the bakery. Now, it's brought down in halacha that even today where there are bakeries, unless you're in a case of great need, one should ideally go and make their own challahs. And some people find it overwhelming. And it's interesting machlekes in the Achronim, where it says it's a mitzvah to make bread and take off challah on Erev Shabbos. But in order to take off challah, you have to make enough challahs that you can take off challah. And unless you're a large family, if you make that many challahs, you're not going to end up using them up. So is it better to make a half portion and not take off challah and have fresh bread on Friday going into Shabbos? Or is it better to make a larger dough, take off challah, and then freeze half of them for next week? It's machlekes achronim. I'm not here to be machria. I'm just pointing out the fact that as much as we can be mechabed Shabbos, we should. Now, times have changed. It is not unusual to have families where both parents work. And to be able to have that time, to be able to make Shabbos is very hard. That's the reason these Jewish publications exist, is to make you feel bad and inadequate. So they tell these stories of these women. I find the important thing is, you know, on Friday I get up about 4 o'clock and I put this up and I set that up and I do this and I do that, you know, and then, you know, and then I can go to work and I come back and I have everything more or less set up. Okay, but those of us who are not mutants and have been sent to Professor Xavier's Academy for mutants and have that kind of strength to be able to do these kind of things as ordinary folk, yeah, we end up needing to be able to cut corners, yeah. Some people cut corners just because they're not interested. That's not, of course, the Rabbi Orlovsky audience. We're all interested, you know. But there's certain people just can't be bothered. Now, to be fair, it's not, there are some people, it's not that they can't be bothered. They just feel overwhelmed. We get overwhelmed very easily. We're a generation that gets overwhelmed thinking about what we have to do. And past generations, they didn't, because if you didn't do it, then you starve to death, you know. So you just have to, you know, pull yourself together and you know, get done what you have to get done. You didn't have the option to go out to the takeout place and buy takeout food. Today, there's so many takeout places, so much takeout food, you know, that, you know, to do something yourself is like really amazing. My kids, when they go to America, they go to Gourmet Glot. This to them is like Disneyland. You know what I mean? They go just to watch the attractions and they come home and they tell me, Abba, you can buy a frozen cookie sheet with the cookies already on it. And you just put it in the oven and they say, oh, I baked cookies. And my kids think that's so funny because you live in a show and they have to sift the flour and set everything up and say, oh, I made cookies. And another kid said, yeah. And they have a bag of cut up vegetables and it comes with a little envelope of spices and you put this into a pot with water and you boil it up and you say, look, I made vegetable soup. And the other kid says, I don't know why they don't include the water. But okay, listen, these are the people who are proactive, because you walk in there and you go past the sushi counter into the appetizing counter, into the prepared, you know, sandwich counter. And then you first come to the takeout section, you know, and you've got, you know, 6 different types of schnitzels, you know, and you got 8 different types of rice and 12 different types of potatoes. And that, you know, gosh, to sit down and make something yourself, you have to really be very proactive, you know. I live here at Shell, and things have really gotten better. Really, they get better with every passing year, you know. When I first came here, the only soda they had was either Coca-Cola or Tempo. Tempo Cola was there just to show you that Israelis are so tough, they don't need soda that tastes good. And they only came in these heavy bottles that you had to return the bottles, and they weighed a ton. And you had to take the bottles and put them into your little plastic sal, which Americans never figured out to wrap the rag around it like Israelis. So by the time you carried it home, the sharp plastic had dug into your hand and you had to have it surgically removed just to get the basket off. And that's all there was. There was no diet soda. There was no other types of soda. You know, if you wanted seltzer, you bought one of those little seltzer makers with the balloonim and the gas things and you'd make them, you know. So, okay, today there's so much stuff. It's nothing compared to what it was. Americans used to come here and bring toilet paper. Yeah, you only had this, like, you know, blue sandpaper that they had. It was unbelievable. I came to Stechem in 1973. To this day, I can't figure it out. The napkins were made out of wax paper, and you just kept wiping your hands. Nothing came off. I guess this way you could use them again, you know, rinse them off and just keep putting out the same napkin, you know. But, you know, there was, you know, today it's so much. But for many years when I lived here, if you wanted to have kreplach, you know, three times a year there's a minig to eat kreplach. And that's Erev Yom Kippur and on Purim. And on Hashanah Rabbah, you had to make it yourself. You couldn't buy kreplach. You know, it was a major thing. You know, I grew up in America. Whoever made kreplach, it never even occurred to you to make kreplach. So we had to, if you wanted kreplach, you had to make your own kreplach. Yeah. Now, you know, a whole bunch of takeout places, they make kreplach for you. You know, you can pick up, you know, it's only about $3 a kreppel, and you can take them home and Baruch Hashem. But they're only sold at the holidays. You know, in America, you can always buy kreplach. No kreplach. So if you want it, you have to make it yourself. Yeah. There are no prune hamantaschen. That's, when I was growing up, there was only two type of hamantaschen, prune and mun. The whole purpose of mun was to trick you. It was like a Purim trick. You would bite into it thinking it was prune, and you realize it was poppy seed. And you go, ah, and then you would take a prune one, yeah? But they don't have them here. So if you want prune hamantaschen, you have to make it yourself. It was 1 year I couldn't even get the likva. I had to make my own prune filling, yeah, just to do it. And the problem is you only put a little bit in, and so you're left with this giant container because there's no way to make, like, just two prunes. So you end up doing a lot of things yourself. But in America, gosh. And then you come to the bakery aisle. Why would anybody bake? Look at how much stuff they have over there. Yeah. And everything's packed. Then you go to the fresh meat, you know, and you wanna make a roast, and the roast is already wrapped up and spiced and set for you, etc. You just pop it in the oven. So much convenience. So many things are there for you. A guy told me that when he was taking a Shalom Bayis course, they said that you should compliment your wife on the takeout place that she chose. The idea being that, of course, she's not going to make it herself. You know? So there are obviously two types of people in the world. There are those people, and then there are the people who write these recipe sections in these from, you know, magazines. Why would anybody in their right mind do any of these things? You can go and buy anything you want. But the idea is that you need to be mechabed Shabbos in the preparation. And whatever that means, and everyone should do it themselves as much as possible. Yeah. The fact is that the Gemara brings stories of Amorayim who had many avadim, but they would do the Shabbos preparation themselves, whether it was salting the fish or whether it was roasting the meat or setting up the candles or making the fire, whatever it was, they did it themselves. They wanted to have a hand in the preparation. This is an early announcement. I can't tell you for sure, but there's an outside chance that we're going to be making a Pesach program here in Eretz Yisrael. We're working on it. Right? Somebody's working on it. And I've always had a tshuka to do my own Pesach program, because unfortunately, many Pesach programs are vacations that take place during Pesach, but they're not a Pesach program, you know? So I was once at a hotel, Erev Pesach, so they had the list of activities, you know? So there was swimming, and there was boating, and there was sports, and there was napkin folding in front of the dining room. And also, I was giving a shiur, Skull and Residence. They threw that in too. It was another one of the options. Yeah. And then afterwards, I went into the kitchen to make my Seder plate. Why? Because I can't speak for every hotel, but they put out on your table a Seder plate with, you know, a few different things. But you know how much romaine lettuce you eat? If you're using that for Mara and using that for Korech? I mean, in my house, we make up the kazesim beforehand. We, you know, so I go into the kitchen. I get permission, and I'm sitting there as they're washing the lettuce. You know, Mashkiach is washing the lettuce, and I'm sitting there with my little color coded chart, and I'm making up my stalks and my leaves and putting them into little plastic bags the way that I do at home. So that when we go to the Seder, I've got all my Mara. I don't know what everybody else does. You know, I mean, one year before I figured this out, I was at a hotel and I had to keep telling them, bring out more. They were shocked. They didn't know what I was doing. You know, so you have to have this year. So I always said, if I had a Pesach program, Erev Pesach would be making your Seder plate. Everybody. Because the preparation itself is part of what makes Pesach exciting. I've told this story in the past. I was teaching in a Hebrew school, the Bar Bat Mitzvah class. And the Bar Bat Mitzvah class in a Hebrew school is very similar to the story they tell about this priest and rabbi and minister in the city who got together to discuss problems that affected, you know, the community and their places of worship. So the priest chose to share that in the church we have a problem. We have bats in the belfry, and we don't know how to get rid of them. And the minister says, yeah, we have a problem too. We have church mice, and I don't know how to get rid of them. And the rabbi said, I'll tell you the truth. We had pigeons in the attic, but I got rid of them. He says, how? He says, I chased them all into the shul. I gave them a bar mitzvah. They flew away and never came back. It's a bit of a joke, but... So that was my class. As soon as a kid would get a bar bat mitzvah, they were out and I never saw them again. So, you know, by the time Pesach came around, it was like Agatha Christie's 10 Little Indians. You're just watching people disappear, you know. So the sisterhood contacted me before Pesach and said, how many kids do you have so we know how much stuff to give you for the model Seder? Now, I don't know if you've ever been to a model Seder. Yeah. Model Seder is where it's good for like second or third grade. You know, you bring the little kids together, you know, and one of them plays the grandfather. He sits in the front. He's running the Seder. One plays the little kid. It's really typecasting, you know, and they put out matzah and they put out grape juice and they put out some lettuce leaves and they put out some gefilte fish and they put out some eggs and they make, a model Seder. They sing the songs and go through it. Now, that's probably fun when you're in second grade, third grade. These kids are already in seventh grade. I'm going to sit here and do a model Seder with them. So I said to the sisterhood, I have a request. As much money as you would have spent, give me that money. I want to do something different with them, Pesach related. Okay, so they show up. All the other classes are having their model Seder. They said, hey, where's our model Seder? I said, we're doing something different. Go to the bathroom and wash your hands with soap. And they came back. And I said, okay, we're going to make charoses. They said, oh, doesn't it come in those little envelopes? I said, no, this is how you make charoses, okay? Every two kids had a grater, grate up the apple, you know, chop up the nuts, add the spices. Everyone's going to make their own charoses and take it home. They were so excited. They never did this in their life. I said, okay, now we're going to grate up the horseradish. I said, I thought it comes in a jar. Nope. going to learn something today. Give everyone a piece of horseradish. They start grinding it. And everyone, whoever did this, knows how it works. You know, you start crying. You wait till there's enough. You stick it in your brother's face. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Okay. I brought in a little broiler. We broiled the bones. We broiled the eggs, you know. We washed the lettuce, you know. And kids who were not interested in anything we did in class suddenly came to life. Because they were preparing for their Seder. It was something real. I said, and if I ever ran a Pesach program, that would be Erev Pesach. We'd have lots of washed lettuce and lots of charts and lots of apples and lots of graters. And everybody make the charosis there. However you make your charosis, do your things however you do it. And everyone's going to get ready for Pesach. There was one year, first year I was married. I remember. First year I was married, I was in Eretz Yisrael. And my wife's due date was on Seder night. Now, again, this was our first kid, so I didn't know that my wife is always late. Not just giving birth, but also giving birth. You know? We didn't know. She could be 3 weeks late, you know. But my father's like, oh my gosh, she'll go into labor and you can't make Pesach. He put us into a hotel. This is my first time I had ever gone to a hotel. My father always made the Seder. We always helped to make it, you know, do everything together. His first year, I was away for Pesach. And we went to a hotel. Erev Pesach, we're walking around Yerushalayim, watching everybody prepare. And I had an empty feeling inside of me. It's Erev Pesach. You're supposed to be making Pesach. You're wandering around like this is a vacation. You know, what are you doing? There's an excitement to Erev Pesach. My kids more or less have picked it up from me, you know, to the point that some of them want to take some of my Seder plate preparations. I'm not going to give it to them. They say, oh, Abi, you want me to make the charoset? Nope. You want me to make the mar? Nope. I'll let people measure out the kazesim of the lettuce. You know what I mean? I'll let them do that, you know? So, you know, that's... There's no creativity to that, but to this, actually, when you have to make the little chart, make sure that you cover it exactly with the right thing, you know, that's exciting. I see people just drop down leaves. What are you doing? Get it just right. But there's an excitement to that preparation, the setting the table, bringing out the Pesach Kalim, setting everything up. There's such an excitement and an adventure to it. How could anybody... not be thrilled by that. That's what Erev Shabbos is supposed to be. That same sense of excitement and enthusiasm, how we're making it, how we're doing it. Yeah? I don't know what it is. I do know what it is. You ever see people who like, you know, battle all Friday morning, you know, and then I'm not talking about people who are in yeshiva or people who are working. Like, you know, they're supposed to be making Shabbos. And then suddenly they go, oh my gosh, we've only got 4 hours left, you know? And then they go into manic mode. You know, what is that? What is that? So, okay, the answer is some people work better under pressure, you know, when they have lots of time. I can relate to that, you know. When I was in school, they used to give you a term paper. They would assign it in November. I'd right away take my books from the library on the subject, leave it on the spare bed in my room. And then on Sunday night in June, I'd suddenly realize, oh my gosh, it's due tomorrow. And I'd open up the books and try to cram, you know, see how much I could read about Napoleon in 4 hours. And then sit at the typewriter and start typing. And I'm so tired. So they used to have this thing, I don't know if it's still on the market, called no-dos. They're basically caffeine pills, you know. The problem is it only wakes up your mind. Your body's still asleep. So you're like, we got to type faster or we're never going to get this done, you know. And your body doesn't listen because it's sleeping. And you're like, this is not working. And my father at some point would poke his head in around 3 o'clock in the morning and says, why do you leave everything the last minute? So I work better under pressure. There are some people like that. But what ends up happening is that Shabbos, instead of it being something that you can appreciate, becomes this craziness. People banging on the bathroom door, I need a shower, I need a shower. I have 8 girls, and even some of my boys have this philosophy, but certainly the girls, that if you take your shower as close to Shabbos as possible, you'll stay clean longer. I don't really think the extra hour in the context of 25 hours is going to make that much of a difference, but they all wait to the last minute to shower to get things done. So when I was a bachur, sometimes I would, you know, be spending Shabbos by old people. I realize now they're probably my age, but to my mind, they were maybe 100, 150, but probably in their 60s. And you'd go into their house, and the whole house is clean, and everything is set, and the chillin's on the blech, and, you know, everything's set up, the table's set. The father is home from mikveh. He's sitting in his chair, you know, being marba sedra. The mother is, or the grandmother, sitting at the table saying her tehillim, and you come in and you're like, wow, it's so calm here. I say, would you like a piece of cake, a cup of tea, you know, have something, you know? It's like, you know, most of my life at my house, it was craziness and screaming and running and taking care of things, etc. And I know certain women who need that. So even if they started early in the morning and they have everything all done and the whole place is clean and everything's settled, about 2 hours before Shabbos, they have that last minute dessert gene that kicks in. And they suddenly decide we need another dessert. And it can't be something like Jell-O. It can't be even something like brownies. It has to be like a trifle, something that involves every appliance. And every clean the house, and suddenly there's this pandemonium going on when everything was so calm and all set, you know, and you're running around like craziness, you know. What a bracha to be able to go into Shabbos where everything is all done and you're relaxed and you can sit down and wait for Shabbos to come. That was the concept of a couple of Shabbos. Yeah, as Talmidim, the Arizal, would go out into the field and wait for Shabbos to come. It's based on a Gemara. They'd wait to greet Shabbos. And it was all done. Everything was taken care of. There was no last minute craziness. Everything was set up. So the important thing with Shabbos is anticipation. And so you have to ask yourself, what can I do to make Shabbos exciting? And how can I participate in it? Now, you can't do everything. Right? There are going to be corners that will be cut. I know this is controversial, but I'm just going to put it right out there. I've never had a potato kugel that was worth making over one that I could buy in the makolet. Okay, so yours is a little crispier. There's a little drier. Yours is a little, you know, more salt, less salt. Yeah. Okay, pesedo, but the amount of effort that goes into a potato kugel, you know, peeling the potatoes and grating them and then, you know, and making the mixture and putting it in the oven and then checking it and then putting it back in the oven and then checking it again and then putting it back in the oven. And now you have to decide, did I keep it in there too long? Is it too dry? Is it too this? You know, so, yeah, it just buy it. Put it on the table. That's my opinion. I know a lot of people who make potato kugels have gotten upset at me over the years and insisted that their potato kugel is worth the effort. And it could be that it is, but, you know, it all depends how much time you have. You got to be real. My mother taught me how to make Shabbos fast. I wanted to put out a cookbook. My wife wouldn't let me because I only have only one title, and it was the title my mother gave me. It's easy, stupid. She'd say, put up the chicken. I said, I don't know how. She goes, it's easy, stupid. Cut a couple of onions, put the chicken in, put in garlic and paprika, and put it in the oven at 350, you know? Put up the brisket. I don't know how. It's easy, stupid. Cut up a couple of onions, put it in, put in some garlic and paprika, and stick it in the oven. 350. So she taught me how to make really good food, really fast. And, you know, so I can make most of Shabbos in less than an hour, you know, so that in less than an hour, I go in and I can put up the big pot for the soup and put in the chicken, put up another pot for the noodles. In the meantime, I start cutting up everything for the chalent, you know, and when the water boils, I add the noodles, and then I put everything in for the chalent. I put everything together, unless I'm making it for a special occasion, I don't fry the onions and brown the meat and everything. I stack everything in very nicely. No one has ever had any complaints. People love my children. And I have that all done. And now I drain the noodles and I put up the water for the gefilte fish. And then I cut up the onions, put in the chicken, add the garlic and paprika, put it into the oven, you know, and then I make the rice, I fill up the urn, I set up the candles, whatever has to be done. I can have it almost all done in an hour. So I'm not making kugels, I'm not potchking, I'm like that. But I got the fish, the soup, the noodles, the chicken. You know, if they're potatoes. If I'm baking sweet potatoes, I make the sweet potatoes, you know. I got the chalent. I got everything's all done. I'll make the tuna fish for shalashudas, you know. I can do everything in an hour. You know, there's the majority of the stuff. So then I leave everybody else to pachka for the rest of the day. You know, I mean, cut this up, do this, do that, you know. You know, I can usually throw in my pesto in the same amount of time. We never used to make pesto, but my daughter gave me a recipe and it's just so ridiculously easy, you know. That, you know, you get a package of pesto and you just pull the leaves off. The leaves come off very easily. Don't put in the whole basil because it can be bitter. So you pull the leaves off the basil and you wash them and drain them, you know. And then for every cup of leaves, you have a half a cup of pine nuts. And then you put in 3 or 4 garlic cloves. You put that into the food processor with some salt and pepper. I can't tell you how much. And then as it's grinding, you keep adding in olive oil. Here's the key. Until you think it's too watery. That was the mistake I always made. I said, well, that looks like it's done. But then it congeals. And so then it gets too thick. So you have to add it until you say to yourself, oh my goodness, this is too liquidy. And then you're done. And then you scoop it out, or in my case, I wait for my wife to scoop it out because I'm not really so good at the scooping out part, and put it into a container. You put it in the fridge, and it's unbelievable. People love it. And it's so incredibly easy. I can do that while I'm doing everything else, you know? If I'm in a more ambitious mood, I make my chocolate chip cookies from a cookbook called Taste Buds. There used to be a place in Lakewood called Taste Buds. And we got their cookbook, and people loved it so much that on the next trip to America, we added into our schedule, we were going to go down to Lakewood and go to Taste Buds. And when we got there, it had closed down. So just a shout out to the Taste Buds cookbook. Anyway, chocolate chip cookies, you know what I mean? So, but all of this I can do in an hour. So, you know, what are people killing themselves over? You know, come up with something that is doable, that you can do, and make Shabbos. Get it done as quickly as possible. And it's not too early to set the table, unless you have a bunch of little kids. Okay. When I had a bunch of little kids, things were much harder. But, you know, you can set the table, set up the candles, fill up the urn, get everything done, make a checklist. Because you always forget something. I forgot to turn off the water bar. I forgot to turn on the urn. If you have a crock pot, you have to remember to turn down the crock pot. Whatever the case is. And if there's a set of Shabbos clocks, set the Shabbos clock, you know. Most of your things you can get done in a short period of time. And the goal should be that the end of Erev Shabbos, I am waiting for Shabbos to come. And I'm doing the preparation so that Shabbos is something that's exciting and anticipated. So that when my kids come for Shabbos, they go, oh, what smells great? Then they start opening all the pots and start looking at everything. There's no surprises. You know, I don't make anything that I, you know, it's such surprises. It's just everything I make is just so unbelievably delicious and wonderful and great. You know, it's such a great smell to it. You know, and I was like, ooh, what is that? You know, yeah, that's what you want. You want to go into Shabbos with saying, I prepared for it. Now, if you go away for Shabbos, you know, somebody else makes it, okay. But you should, if you can, get there early enough that you do something. There'll be some preparation, something that you're doing that fills you with that sheshes yomim ta'asekom melachtecha, that you've spent time preparing for Shabbos. That Shabbos is something that you're a participant in and not a spectator. You know, I used to have girls in the Ve'yu Yishalayim, they would sometimes say, would it be okay if we came over to help you make Shabbos? Or they'd say, to help you make Pesach, because we never had that and we want to see how. And I said, well, it's a sacrifice, but okay, fine. You want to peel the carrots for the soup or the potatoes for the challah? Yeah, we'll find things for you to do, you know? There's an anticipation, there's an excitement. And when you get to participate, I have guys too who say, you know, they're here in Eretz, they want the chance to prepare for Pesach. They don't have a chance to prepare for Pesach, you know? When I was younger, we used to have Bachram over more often, you know? So they would prepare for Pesach. They would spend 40 minutes to an hour brushing their hat. Over and over. I know they had to keep replacing it, I guess, because they must have brushed away the felt after a while, you know, but that was their preparation. Yeah. And then, you know, looking at it in the mirror, trying to get just the right angle, you know. But if you go into it, I remember I was by somebody's house who was very involved in Kiruv. And he had a house full of company. And there's a lot of work that goes into that if you're going to be one of these people. You know, we have a lot of guests, a lot of things, you know. And he said to me at one point, Shabbos here is meant very meaningful, but it's not very restful. Yeah, because Shabbos has to be something where I'm investing in it if I want to get a return. The more I'm putting into that preparation, you know, you know why Yaakov says, referring to Shechem, that I quote, Becharbi ubekashti. Rashi says, Charbi is my chokma and kashti is my tefillah. Why? He says, because chokma is sharp. And when Talmidei Chacham argue, it's like two pieces of metal that are rubbing against each other and sharpen each other. But tefillah is a bow and arrow, because the further you pull it back, the further the arrow goes. Same thing with tefillah. The more kavanah you have, the more effective the tefillah is. I dare say the same thing about Shabbos. The more preparation you put into it, the more meaningful it is. The more you can say, this is my Shabbos. And whether that means baking challahs or making food or just setting up the table or getting the candles or whatever it is that you're doing, everyone should want to prepare for Shabbos, not just sit on the couch and watch other people do it. You want to prepare for Shabbos. It's part of Shabbos that we're putting in the preparation to be able to go into it. So as we mechazik ourselves during this time with our Shmiras Shabbos, yeah, so we should be conscious that we're using the time, Erev Shabbos. As the Chazal say, Mi shetorach be'erev Shabbos, yoicho b'Shabbos. Mi shelo torach be'erev Shabbos, ma yoicho b'Shabbos. It's the preparation for Shabbos that makes Shabbos even more meaningful. And now we come to the question and answer portion of our program. Before I begin, I should point out that someone asked a question. I'm not sure what the question is. He says, what happened to the little flourish you used to do when you introduced the question and answers? I'm not familiar, but if this is it, so here's my flourish. I don't know what the flourish was. I guess I have to go back and actually watch some of these. Anyway, as you know, you have an option to sponsor the podcast. You can sponsor our Parsha 5 minutes. Now, again, that, you know, I don't actually say anything because they're secret, pre-recorded. But we put you up on the screen, you know what I mean? Or you could have the option of sponsoring the question and answers. So this is the sponsor of the question and answer. If you're looking for a perfect companion for your Shabbos table, look no further than Torah Sweets. A blend of stories, halacha, quotes, humor, and more. Join thousands of others by signing up for free by emailing TorahSweets, that's one word, at gmail.com. This is my good friend, Mendel Dubinsky. And it's a beautiful thing. I read it myself. He sends it to me by email, and I certainly recommend it. Okay, our first question by Anonymous. I am a perfectionist, and lately I've been realizing how much it is hurting my life. My question is that all the advice I receive is that it's okay not being perfect. But I'm struggling with this because it seems that the Torah promotes some type of perfectionism. For example, we're judged for every action and any imperfection is accounted for. And we're responsible on some level even for clear mistakes. And if we do a lot of good, whatever we do that's wrong will be held against us. And of course, the therapist jumped to the point of tshuva as there's not being a demand to be perfect. But it seems to me just the opposite. Every action has to be accounted for, just that there's a way to fix the mistakes with tshuva. And then with tshuva itself, I need to accept on myself never to do this again and be perfect forever as part of the process. It can be a little overwhelming. Am I wrong to think that the Torah does demand perfection? And how do I prevent my perfectionist nature from making me think this way about religion and causing me to be overwhelmed? Well, we're out of time. Thanks so much for watching. If you want to find out more about... No, I took this question, even though I knew it was lengthy, because I think it's important, because there's a lot of people who have this. I have this issue. Now, beyond the philosophical, my first answer is Prozac. Yeah, it really can help you relax and not to get so stressed out. But that's people who are perfectionists to the point that they freeze up, you know. I had a person once who told me that he used to daven, and it would take him very, very long time to daven because, you know, he was worried he didn't say with kavanah and he would go over it again. He said it could take him 3 hours to say Shmoneh Esrei, you know. So I gave him a bunch of eights, you know, and I saw him sometime later and I said, you know, how's it going? And he says, oh, great. I saw Rabbi Scheinberg. He told me to take Prozac. So if you have an obsessive personality, that's something different. But let's deal with the philosophical question of, does the Torah demand perfection? So the short answer is no. No. You know, you're 100% right. You're going to be held responsible for every action. Having said that, you find this idea in the Gemara. We just had it, those of you who do Daf Yomi, it just came up in Kiddushin, about the Kohanim who are wearing the Big Day Kahuna. Now, the Kohanim come and they dress in the Big Day Kahuna, which are Kadosh. And the purpose of it is to do the Avoda. But they're not doing the Avoda the whole time. And so aren't they getting personal benefit from the begodim when they're not doing the avoda? They're wearing it, it's comfortable, they're enjoying it, whatever the case happens to be. So then aren't they over the issa of me'ila that comes from doing something that is taking benefit from hektish? And the answer is no. Listen to what the Gemara says. Because the Torah was not given to Malchei Hashareis. And therefore, Kodesh Baruch Hu understands that you're a human being, and a human being has limitations. Now, does that mean my actions don't have consequences? Of course not. Because if the negative things that I do don't have consequences, then the positive things I do don't have consequences either. But the answer is, you are a work in progress. And anyone who thinks that I'm going to be perfect at the beginning is making a terrible mistake. I've mentioned this in the past, but Moshe Shapiro, I heard him explain it a few times. The concept of atbash. Atbash seems somewhat random. It's a method where you switch the first letter with the last letter, the second letter with the second to last letter. It's atbash. Aleph with tuf, beis with shin, and it goes all the way through. So he says, what's the logic of it? The logic of it is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world from top to bottom. He started on the highest levels in the Elyonim and slowly worked his way down until the bottom level where we are. If you go into the mall and you find the big chart of the world, you'll see the little arrow on the bottom in the Malchus of Asiya, And the little arrow says, you are here. There's no question. We're at the bottom of the process. But Hashem started from Aleph and worked his way down to Tav. We're born as a baby. We are helpless. We can't talk. We can't move. We can barely see. We need someone to change us, to feed us, to burp us, to dress us, to care for us, until we can slowly figure out how to smile so that people might like us. And then you come up with this great innovation. Takes a long time, takes months till you're able to do this. You can turn over. Yep. And everyone applauds. Yay! What an accomplishment. You have to wait till you're very old to get applause for that again. But anyway, you turn over, and then eventually you can get up on all fours and you can rock. It's very exciting. And then you start practicing sounds. Now, I have some of my grandchildren who are convinced that they're able to speak, but they're not saying any words that I can recognize. And they're so frustrated because they're saying to me, and the only thing that has proved effective is when I answer them in their own language and I go, I have a whole conversation. They might know what I'm saying, but I have no idea. Anyway, it's similar to me talking Yiddish. But anyway, there's this. So they're able to come up with sounds. They say their first word. We're so excited. So excited, you know. I used to sit with my children. And I would just sit them and just go over and over again. Abba, 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 Abba. And very often their first word was Abba instead of Ima. And my wife, who would take care of them all day, was, you know, surprised. But that's only because the only thing I did with these kids was go Abba, 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 Abba. So they finally learned how to talk, you know. And then eventually you learn how to walk. You spend a lot of time falling down. You learn how to walk and you learn how to talk. And then you go and you learn how to write. You learn how to read and you learn simple mathematics and you build yourself up. How can you expect perfection from somebody who, you know, doesn't know how to control their own bowel movements? How do you get perfection for somebody who's trying to learn how to read? Yeah, learn how to stand straight. You know, the whole world is a mystery to them. The answer is your work in progress, and you have to try to achieve things. Many years ago, I heard this expression. It says, how do you learn to make good decisions? By making bad decisions. And the Gemara says that there's no way to come to the MS without first making mistakes. Amar Avinu first had to investigate every Avodah Zarah until he realized that they were all wrong, until he could arrive at the truth. By a process of elimination. How often do you come across a Gemara says, Masnisim Deloka Rabbi Yossi? Well, why don't you say who it is? Why do you start off by saying, well, it's not going like him? You know? Gemara at the beginning of Bava Metzia, one of my favorite Gemaras to teach, it says, Masnisim Deloka Benanis. So that I can say, yes, we have no Benanis. We have no Benanis. Anyway, but, you know, you're going to make mistakes. It's built into the process. And therefore, it says in Pirkei Avos, Lefum Tzara Agra, the reward goes based on the effort. And some people are going to have a much harder time, and God grades on a curve. He doesn't expect you to be perfect. He expects you to be the best Jew. That's one of the reasons, with Hanukkah coming up, that we were so upset about the Greeks for introducing sports. So one reason is because we're so bad at it. But the other reason is because sports says there's one finish line. And everyone has to run for that finish line. So if you already eliminated everybody except for five Kenyans, you know what I mean? There's nobody else who's going to compete with them. So that's it. You know, I'm going to be 65 in Shvat. And I realized that my odds of becoming a Major League Baseball player have really dropped significantly. I'm just not going to do it. I didn't have that gift. I didn't have that coordination. I didn't have that strength. I could do it. You know, Instead, I specialize at making acerbic comments that have made people be my mortal enemies for years. But you play to your strength. And if you remember, I said this over in my interview with Nissan Black, you know. So the Kotzka says, if I am I because you are you and you are you because I am I, then I am not I and you are not you. Meaning, I can't judge myself against you. You know? Is it fair to compare Batman to Superman? Superman's an alien from another planet who can fly and shoot beams out of his eyes and is invulnerable. Batman's a guy, you know, who's got a bunch of gadgets. I mean, how do you compare the two? So Batman's got to do the best that he can, and Superman's got to do the best that he can. And I got to do the best that I can do, and I will never be Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. But Shlomo Zalman Auerbach will never be me. He thanks God every day for that one. But, you know, I can do things that he can't do. The Dubna Magid was good friends with the Vilna Gaon, whatever that means. But the Vilna Gaon says, well, how come you never give me Musa? Because I'll give you Musa. You're the great Vilna Gaon because you never leave this room. Could you do what I do? Travel around and speak in communities and to give chizik to everybody and still be the Vilna Gaon? The Vilna Gaon started crying because he knew he couldn't. He didn't leave his room because he knew that you needed Vilna Gaon, you needed Dubna Magid, and the two of them are not going to be the same. So when you say perfectionism, nobody's perfect. My wife got the last one. No, of course you're going to fall short. And it's built into the system you're going to fall short. And you're going to be held responsible for your actions. But what that means is different things to different people. And so therefore, a person who's struggling with a particular issue, his victories are going to be different than the victories of a person who grew up with different skills and different abilities. And so no one is expected to be perfect with a capital P. I don't have to be the best. I have to be the best me. And that's why when you set one finish line for everybody, it's impossible. And that's why the Masil Shasharim says, yeah, the beginning, ma chovasu be'olamo, in your world. I don't have to be the best. I have to be the best me. I have to work with the limitations that I have and try to do as much as I can. And by definition, I'm going to fall short. That's part of the human experience. Just the fact that you're a human being and you're physical, you're going to fall short. So I'm going to be held responsible. I once said to somebody, you know, I said, I'd rather have my averus than your mitzvahs. He was such a nasty character, and he put people down and, you know, did things in a terrible way. So even the averas that I do are better than your mitzvahs. You know, because you're a nasty piece of work. So the answer is, I got to be the best me. And yeah, there are things that are going to fall short. And the thing to remember is I'm a work in progress. The Shari Tshuva says, if you're still doing chatoyim, do not focus on charata. Don't look at regret. Work on changing your behavior. That's all. You know, take another step forward, another step forward. I know how old you are, but when you get into your 60s, you realize you tell time by decades. And I got to be better in my 60s than I was in my 50s, and my 50s than I was in my 40s, my 40s than I was in my 20s. Life is a progress. As Douglas Adams, who wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, said, I don't know if I went everywhere I was supposed to go, but I think I ended up where I was supposed to be. Okay. And I guess we're out of time. There'll be no more questions. No more questions! That's it! And until next time, if you want to find out more about the show, you can go to my website, rabbialaski.com. You can sponsor an episode. You can sponsor the question answers. You can sponsor a parsha. You can join one of the online shiurim. Yeah, Masil Shasharim, Par Tefillah, Daf Yomi. You can listen to the theme song that Lenny Solomon wrote for me. You can do all kinds of things. Hold the pickles, hold the lettuce. Special orders don't upset us. All we ask is that you let us. Make it your way. Have it your way. At the Rabbi Orlovsky Show, and I am David Orlovsky, and this has been the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.
It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. The Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Knowledge and wisdom will help you grow. Lots of fun in every episode. And we don't have to rhyme. No, we don't. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show on RabbiOrlovsky.com. Torah, anytime, YouTube, and more. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Till next time, till we meet again. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.